Chapter 42. Collecting the energy virus was both easier and took longer than expected. We knew exactly where the infected bank of power cells had been ejected from the Flying Dutchman. We knew exactly its speed and direction. We knew exactly how long it had been out there, and we knew there were no significant gravity wells in interstellar space to alter its course. For safety, Valkyrie jumped in 6 light hours from where we expected the discarded power cells to be, and we sent a narrow beam sensor pulse out. 12 hours later, we had the results. Zilch. 0. Nada. Where the f-? Skippy took off his ginormous hat and scratched his head. How can it not be there?
Could someone else have found it? Sims asked.
How? Skippy asked. We are in the middle of freaking nowhere out here. The odds of a starship stumbling across it.
Not stumbling, Sims explained. Could the virus have used the remaining power in the dropship's power cells to activate a beacon or some other communications device?
Oh, shit, he groaned. Jennifer, you are truly a ray of freaking sunshine today. Don't be an ass, Skippy, I reprimanded him. The bank of power cells he had ejected from the Flying Dutchman was equipped with a beacon and data connections and had its own simple computer. The beacon was normally active only when power cells were detached from the ship for installation, removal, or major servicing, and I had forgotten about it. Answer the question. I don't have to, numbskull. There is no beacon out there or any kind of signal. Duh!
There is not a beacon out there now. Duh!
I resisted the urge to flip him off. Shit. Ugh. This sucks.
Let's find out, huh? I suggested.
Pilot, program a series of jumps to take us away from here, 1/4 light year at a time. In the direction of... I checked the main display. The closest wormhole, please.
Joe,
Skippy whined. Do you know how long a search like that will take? I know it would take less time if you helped instead of bitching about it. My life sucks. Okay, I programmed a search pattern. When we reached a distance of 1 1/4 light years from where we expected the discarded power cells to be, we detected an extremely faint signal. That was both good news and bad. Bad because it meant the energy virus was smart enough to think, to use its dwindling resources to activate a device attached to the shell that encased the bank of power cells. Good, because we at least knew it was still there less than 1.5 years ago. And very bad, because the source of the signal was within 50 meters of where we expected to find it, yet the bank of power cells was clearly not there now. Crap. We had many theories, like maybe the damn thing had shut off the beacon and somehow overloaded a power cell to move itself. That was unlikely, but it clearly was not where it was supposed to be, so something had happened. Back to 6 light hours from the target zone. This time we sent out a broader active sensor pulse to cover an area 2 million kilometers across. Again, nothing. Absolutely nothing was out there. Any type of search in the vastness of space takes forever. We went back to 1 1/4 light years away from the target, then jumped toward the target 1 light week at a time. The beacon cut off. Back 1 light day at a time, then... Okay, you get the idea. We kept moving forward and back, chasing just the right set of photons that were crawling outward from the event we wanted to witness. We had to find a position not too early, or there would be nothing to see, or too late when the event was already over. It had to be just right. I felt like Goldilocks in the House of the Three Bears. Anyway, we found the right spot and witnessed 3 things happening in sequence. First, we detected the gamma ray burst of a Theranan starship jumping in. Next, the beacon cut off. Thirdly, there was not a subsequent gamma ray burst of that starship jumping away. Where did it go? I asked, standing up and peering closely at the holographic display. We should be able to detect that ship jumping away even from here, right? Yes, Joe, Skippy confirmed. Could the Theranan have technology to mask the gamma rays? I asked, like we do? No. He made no attempt to conceal his peevishness. If you will quit the blah, blah, blah for a freaking moment, I can think about this. Think faster. We've already wasted too much time. Ugh. We waited. In my head, I was humming the old theme song from the TV quiz show Jeopardy. Will you shut up? He fumed at me. Oops. Apparently, I wasn't humming the song only in my head. Come on, I urged him. There aren't that many possibilities. Either the ship jumped away or it's still there.
We know it's not there, so... Captain, Reed called from the pilot seat. There is a third possibility. Eh, I said, sounding like my great-grandfather, and giving my crew more reason to refer to me as the old man. The starship might not have matched speed with the target before it jumped in, she explained. Probably didn't. That takes too much time and fuel. More likely it sent a dropship to rendezvous with the target. They latched on, towed it back to the starship, and... You're right. I slapped a knee. Good thinking, Fireball. When our old bank of power cells got aboard the Theranin ship, the energy virus had a feast. That's why the Theranin didn't jump away. They couldn't. The virus drained all their power. Skippy frowned. It's possible. Is it possible to determine how fast that ship was moving and in which direction when it jumped in? From here? Oh, that's a tough one. I'd have to use the gamma rays themselves as a source of illumination. Some of those rays would have bounced off our discarded power cells. We know the Theranin jumped in 80,000 kilometers from the beacon. Then some of the reflected gamma rays had to come back and bounce off the starship at just the right angle for us to see it here, and for a time long enough for me to triangulate the direction the ship was traveling. And, Skippy, can you do it or not? Oh, I already did it. I know exactly where that ship is, or should be. Close enough. Lots of variables, like whether and how the reactors vented plasma as their containment vessels shut down. The loss of mass could have pushed the ship. We get the idea. Reed, bring us back there again. Let's hope the third time is the charm. I sure hope so, Skippy grunted. Man, finding anything in space is complicated. I wish life was like Star Trek, where ships that come out of warp are all traveling at the same speed. And none of them, I laughed, are upside down in relation to each other. While dropships had a distinctive up and down, being designed to set down on a planet, most starships didn't have an upper or lower side that you could tell from looking at it. We did refer to Valkyrie as having a dorsal hull for the top and a belly for the bottom, but they were almost identical. From the outside, the only way to tell how the artificial gravity was set up on the interior was to look at the numbers and letters painted on the dock and bay doors. Some ships, like assault carriers, or certain small escorts like frigates, did have a noticeable top and bottom, but that had little effect on how the ship was oriented in flight. While flying in close formation, ships usually adjusted their orientation to match the lead ship simply for purposes of good order and discipline. Anyway, Skippy was right. Flying in space and finding anything in a search area that could encompass an entire star system was complicated. The starship, a light cruiser, was 3,000 kilometers from where Skippy predicted it would be. It was apparently dead, completely dead. When the energy virus attacked the Flying Dutchman, it had first attempted to overload the reactors, or so we thought. With the Theranin, Skippy guessed the virus was too weak to take over a sophisticated system immediately, so it focused on simply draining power and restoring itself. Based on the lack of any power radiating from the ship, the virus appeared to have succeeded. There were no signs of life. Is the energy virus still viable? I asked. Most likely, yes, Skippy answered. Sims had a question. Why isn't it sending out another beacon to trap more ships? That was a desperation move, Skippy explained. Not part of its programming. With the Dutchman, it failed to achieve its mission. We got away. The Theranin ship is dead, so the virus has gone dormant awaiting further instructions, which I can't provide, but I can wake it up. Great. I was eager to get going. Let's do it. Yeah. Good news and bad news about that. Good news is the virus will be more viable than we expected. It should be easier to get it to respond the way we need. Bad news is we will need to be farther away to be safe. Remember, that virus is capable of reaching into other dimensions of space-time. We need to keep Valkyrie far away, until it is fully contained. That will add 2 days to the process. Crap. I was very aware that we were burning valuable time while Sentinels could be waking up all across the galaxy. We have already burned 3 days out here looking for the damn thing. Make it snappy, okay? Do you want quick, or do you want safe, Joe? I mean, considering that if anything goes wrong, we could lose Valkyrie, and any hope of stopping Sentinels, and therefore any hope of saving everyone in the entire galaxy. But I'll do it your way if you... No, make it unsnappy, please. Finding the energy virus was a painstaking pain in the ass. Collecting it was an even worse pain in the ass with the potential of causing the destruction of Valkyrie, so bonus. As bait, we used a Panther dropship with the interior fittings of the cabin ripped out and stuffed full of power cells. Those power cells were not just a tempting snack for the virus. They were supposed to provide the initial power for the containment system. From our position 85 light minutes away, twice what Skippy thought was the minimum safe distance, we launched the Panther, and it raced away, attached to three other Panthers. Those three piloted ships detached after they accelerated the bait up to speed and began a long deceleration to bring them back to us. The bait ship coasted onward, a voyage of over 1.5 billion kilometers, while we waited anxiously. The bait ship decelerated hard until it was less than 5 light seconds from the dead Thurannan cruiser, then it crept forward cautiously under Skippy's guidance. He was connected to the Panther by a micro-wormhole. 2 micro-wormholes, actually. The event horizon that connected to the bait ship was 100 kilometers from the micro-wormhole connecting Skippy aboard Valkyrie. If the virus attempted to sneak through the first wormhole, Skippy could sever the one near us. That was the plan, anyway. We had no way to test it. To the shock of everyone involved, especially Skippy, his plan worked. The bait ship bumped up against the dead cruiser's cold hull, and a bot crawled out to plug a power cable into an access port at an airlock. He reported excitedly that the energy virus immediately began flowing up the power cable into the dropship. That frightened me. The damn thing was smart. Too smart. It figured its best opportunity of gaining access to more power was where someone coming to the derelict ship would go first. An airlock. It was right. Like I said, too smart. Oh well. The virus was built by the elders. Of course it was coldly logical and sneaky. When the virus determined enough of it had come aboard the Panther to use up the ample energy resources there, Skippy did 2 things. He activated the containment system, trapping the virus aboard the Panther harmlessly inside the hull. And he fired the chemical booster rocket strapped to the dropship, sending it racing away and severing the power cable. The little bot got left behind, in case you were wondering. The thing had a brain the size of a raisin, and Skippy had wiped all but its most essential code before it left Valkyrie, so it was never aware of its existence. Plus, it was packed with explosives that blew the thing into 1,000,000 pieces as a final screw you to the energy virus. So, there's that. The most dangerous part of the operation was when a pair of our dropships linked up with the bait Panther and extracted the containment chamber. The containment held, and the crews were able to hook up external power connections to keep the containment field stable. All that worked better than expected. The critical moment was when the dropships approached the bait ship. There were still a few places outside the containment area where the virus could be hiding, like in the bait Panther's antennas. Every other external system that held power, or could hold power, had been removed before it left Valkyrie, or was discarded after it rocketed away from the cruiser. Even items like landing gear were a potential problem. The legs had a spring-like mechanism that could have harbored the virus. That stuff was all ripped out, leaving only antennas and 1 beacon as a potential problem. Dedicated bots flew over to the bait ship, disassembled or cut away the offending items, then floated away. Only then did the crews latch on for the tricky work. The part that frightened me the most was when the containment vessel came aboard our ship to be housed in a docking bay. Despite Skippy's assurances that the virus had been rendered harmless, I kept waiting for it to strike. Before we could leave, we had 1 more thing to do. Make sure the faint remnants of energy virus infecting that cruiser was safely disposed of. That plague ship was hazardous waste, and we wanted to be part of the solution, not the pollution. So we launched 4 missiles that had their warheads replaced by inert lumps of metal. They burned hard toward the dead Thurannan ship, coasted at high speed, then flipped around and decelerated until they were flying toward the cruiser at only 400 kilometers per hour. The 4 missiles struck in areas where the target's armor plating was thick, assuring that nothing penetrated the hull. The combined kinetic energy of the missiles was transferred down into the structural framing of the cruiser, giving it a nudge in the right direction. Our job was done. If we had time later, we would come back and take care of the problem permanently. But even if we never came back, that cruiser would fall into a red dwarf star in 37,000 years, where the ship, and even the tiny bit of residual virus itself, would be consumed and pose no threat to the galaxy. We jumped away, heading back towards civilization to ping a relay station. Hopefully, civilization had not collapsed while we were away. Jennifer Sims woke up abruptly, her heart pounding. Instinctively, she stilled her breathing, listening to the sounds in her cabin, and reached for her Z-phone. There were no alarms blaring, just the normal, barely audible hissing of air from vents, and her phone screen was not showing any alerts or priority messages. Good. That meant the reason she awakened was... She checked her phone again, blinking to make her eyes focus. The reason she had been jarred out of sleep half an hour early was the dream she had just had, which was in fact not good at all. The little orange pills provided by Mad Dr. Skippy as a sleep aid were magical. She was sleeping better than she had in years. In addition to supplying the pills, the elder AI had convinced her to crank down the temperature in her cabin to 65 Fahrenheit, beginning a few hours before she went to bed. And she was wearing thin socks so her feet didn't get cold, and also using a weighted blanket. The combination was working better than she could have hoped. She was getting 7.5 solid hours in Slumberland, and quantity of sleep was not the only benefit. The sleep was deep and refreshing. She woke up not even needing a cup of coffee to feel human. Unfortunately, Skippy had warned the pills were habit-forming and would screw up her natural ability to fall asleep and stay there, so she had to wean herself off the magic beginning that night. There was one side effect of the sleep aid she wasn't thrilled about, though Skippy assured her the side effect was actually a good thing. Dreams. Vivid dreams. Long, complicated, vivid dreams in color. And she remembered many of them in the morning. The dream she had just experienced had begun pleasantly enough. A quaint mountain village, sometime in the Middle Ages, with a solid rock wall surrounding the wood and stone houses and shops. Eventually, the dream veered into a less pleasant narrative. A monster was approaching, and she climbed atop the wall with the other villagers holding a bow with a quiver full of arrows on her back. She would not need to use the unfamiliar weapon, the woman next to her whispered, for the village had a magical horn that would scare the monster away. As trees in the dark woods shook with the unseen monster's approach, villagers prepared to work the bellows that would force air through the giant horn, lifting the handles to fill the bellows, the leathery mechanism wheezing as air rushed in. "No!" she had screamed, and that woke her. "Skippy," she coughed, reaching for the squeeze bottle of water next to her bed. "Temperature up, please." Even before he answered, she saw the gentle lighting in the bathroom begin glowing, and water trickled in the shower, making sure it would be hot for her. "You are not going back to sleep?" Skippy asked quietly. "Really, you can get an extra hour of rack time if you..." "No." She rolled over to plant her feet on the floor. "We need to talk. Is Bishop awake?" "Not yet. You want me to..." "Don't." She knew the general would be up soon. He always was. "We may have a problem." "Ah!" I jerked backward as my cabin door slid open, coming face to face with Sims. She startled me, that's all. "XO?"
"Sir."
Her eyes darted from me to over my shoulder. I got the message. "Come in." The door slid shut behind her, and I mumbled an apology about the dirty clothes piled on the arm of my couch. Also for having such a large cabin, which really wasn't my choice.
"I had a dream last night."
"You have been dreaming?" she asked. "Yeah, pretty wild sometimes." Skippy had told me vivid dreams would be a side effect of the sleep aid, and he hadn't exaggerated. And no, I wasn't having those kind of dreams, you perverts. Okay, not only those kind of dreams. Oh, crap. Sims was looking at me. If she wanted to discuss the content of an erotic dream she had, I needed coffee first, and maybe to request Skippy fake a reactor meltdown. Jennifer Sims is a woman, and I'm a guy. She is not just my very valued executive officer, she is a friend. The two of us have been through a lot of shit together. I have strong affection for her. I want her to be happy. I'm happier when she is around, even when she is nagging me about eating junk food. I would do anything for her. But talking about her sex life, or lack of it, is not something I would ever look forward to. This dream of yours, it... She either didn't know what I feared or she ignored it. "It was about a monster. The details don't matter. The point is, there was a weapon that could defeat the monster. A powerful weapon."
"Okay."
I relaxed just a bit. That sounds familiar. You were dreaming about a sentinel? She nodded.
Sir, I'm concerned we might be making a big mistake. A fatal mistake.
I'm not following you. We have a powerful weapon. We don't know for sure it will work, but...
The energy virus is an elder weapon, isn't it?
Yeah, so?
Don't sentinels react when elder weapons are used?
It... Oh, shit, Skippy? I don't know, Joe, he admitted, his avatar slowly shaking his head. I just do not know. Damn it. We were planning to kill one type of elder weapon, a sentinel, with another type of elder weapon, an energy virus. Of course we had to use elder tech to fight elder tech. Nothing else had the power to do the job. There was no question that we had to deploy an elder weapon, though all along Skippy questioned whether he could do it effectively or whether the energy virus could kill a sentinel without us first weakening the killing machine through other means. Other means which we did not have. Now, Sims and her dream had thrown a monkey wrench into the whole plan. She had asked the question, would the use of an elder weapon backfire on us by waking up every other sentinel in the galaxy? Shit. That was a very good question. The last time any jackass lit off an elder weapon, sentinels had come out of hibernation to smash the Rindaloo and Maxulks nearly back to the Stone Age. Would our use of the energy virus, instead of eliminating the sentinel threat, actually trigger the end of all life in the galaxy? This can't be happening, I groaned. Ah, crap. Slumping, I sat on the couch, head in my hands. I felt cold. It was too much. No way could I be responsible for making that decision, whether to take the risk of deploying the energy virus. It was too much for me. Too much for any person. In the back of my head, I heard a biblical passage which my stupid brain garbled. Basically, Jesus asked, "Let this cup pass from me." He had been faced with a burden too great to bear, even for him. No one could blame me if I, Joe Bishop, a well-known knucklehead, had reached my limit. Everyone had a limit. I felt a hand on my shoulder, then an arm pulling me close. She didn't say anything. She didn't need to. Another voice sounded in my head. It wasn't a verse from the Bible, but it was a powerful voice of authority. It was U.S. Army Sergeant Greg Koch, my fire team leader in Nigeria. He was telling me to get off my lazy ass because a job needed doing, and the United States Army, in its infinite wisdom, had decided Specialist Joe Bishop needed to handle it. And this time I couldn't use my trusty E4 sham shield to shirk my duty. Shit. Sir, Sims rocked my shoulders. We can go back to Earth. Let command decide. No. I shook my head emphatically and reached over to pat her shoulders. Thanks for the concern. Joe. She looked me straight in the eye. Like I said, we had been through a whole lot of shit together. A little informality in private wasn't inappropriate. It's okay. Really. Command won't have any info we don't have. I'm not passing the buck on this one. That will only waste time we don't have. This is a call I have to make. She offered me a fist to bump, and I did it. Skippy, let's walk through this. Start with what we know. The energy virus has already been used twice outside of the Roach Motel without triggering a response by sentinels. The first time against the Dutchman, then against a Theranan ship. That is correct, Joe. So we can assume that type of elder weapon simply being active is not enough to cause sentinels to stomp everything flat? Geez. Skippy took off his hat and scratched his head. I guess so. Maybe the key is who is directing their use. No one ordered the virus to target the Theranan, I noted. Good point. The virus was acting under the authority of its programming. Although, it has exceeded its authority, right? It was designed to protect a site like the Roach Motel, not to roam around the galaxy attacking random targets. We screwed everything up when the Dutchman escaped from the Roach Motel. That was not supposed to happen. Oh, man. Are we risking an even bigger freaking problem? We unleashed an energy virus, released it from where it was contained in the Roach Motel. Could that stupid thing replicate out of control and destroy the entire galaxy? Sims sucked in a breath. Great.
She had come to me with a game-over type of problem, and somehow I had found an even bigger this-could-be-the-end-of-everything issue. Yay me!
No, Joe, Skippy said, too late for my racing heartbeat. The virus has a built-in mechanism to prevent it from replicating out of control. Its ability to make copies of itself is severely limited, and that is a physical limit, not something that can be hacked. It's like, seedless grapes, I suppose. Only in my example, the energy virus entirely lacks the DNA sequences for making seeds. Those genes are not merely switched off. That is one thing you do not need to worry about.
Okay. I took a breath. If use of an energy virus is authorized by you, we should be okay?
That is a reasonable assumption, yes, he agreed.
That is only half of the equation, Sims objected. We will be using the energy virus against a sentinel. That has got to be a violation of whatever rules the sentinels use to decide when to act.
I can't help you there, Skippy shrugged. Sentinels aren't supposed to decide anything. I have no idea how they are doing what they're doing. I suspect that is why there have been relatively few attacks against inhabited planets. The things are lost. They lack direction. And no, I can't give them direction. I already told you that.
But, Sims wasn't conceding the point. Killing a sentinel has got to provoke a response.
Maybe, Skippy shuddered. I'm more concerned about what happens if we attack a sentinel and don't kill the damned thing. I thought for a moment, aware that Sims and Skippy were waiting for me. I'm walking through this in my head. If we don't use an Elder weapon, we have no chance to stop the Sentinels. The only Elder weapon we have access to has already been deployed outside the Roach Motel without provoking a response. The difference is, we will be using the virus against a Sentinel.
Okay, so the difference is the target.
Any weapon we use against a sentinel might cause all the others to wake up to protect themselves. We can't risk not attacking, or the damned thing could kill billions of people, I concluded.
We have to attack. We have to do something. Someone has to do something, I added, talking to myself.
XO, I looked at her. Does that make sense, or am I just telling myself what I want to hear?
It's a well-reasoned argument, sir. The only way to be sure we don't bring every sentinel in the galaxy down on our heads is not to act. And you're right. We have to act. We have to do it.
It's worth the risk, then?
She grimaced.
I'll let you know after we see what happens.
Thanks. You were right to bring this to me.
Hey.
What?
In your dream, what happened to the monster?
I don't know. She looked embarrassed.
I woke up too soon.